Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Je vole sous le soleil. Sans toi, rien n'est pareil. Je vole sous ton ciel. Je vole sous les nuages. Tu as laissé tes bagages. Je vole sous un toit. Même si tes bras sont loin de moi.
Bonjour, Ruler Mark listeners. How are you all doing? I know. Long time no speak. Well, I hope you're all holding up okay in this really, really difficult time. I just wanted to touch base and give you all a quick update on what I've been up to over the past... has it been a year? Longer? I'm not sure. Basically, in March last year, Paul and I, we had our bags packed and we were ready to head back overseas to Tokyo, actually, to begin research for the second season of Ruler Mark. And I know that might sound crazy, a podcast about France in Tokyo, but trust me, we had it all planned out. It was going to be amazing. And of course, that didn't happen. The day we were due to land in Tokyo was actually the day that Scott Morrison called all Australians from overseas back home. I'm sure you all remember that day very, very well. And since then, I've been trying to sort of keep the Ruler Mark dream alive. I kept learning French for a lot of last year. I kept pinning all of my dream locations to Pinterest, but 2020 was just not the year for travel or a travel podcast, and neither is 2021 by the look of things. However, there is something big which has gotten me through some of the darker times in lockdown, and I have a sneaking suspicion that if you're a Ruler Mark listener, it's probably helped you too. And yes, I'm talking about food. I've been championing cheese, going bonkers for butter, and I'm partially made of pastry now. Food was important to me before, that was obvious, but it has become a real lifeline now, and I know that for many people, this has been our form of escape. Let me know if this sounds like you, but Paul and I, whenever we went on our walks, we'd do this thing where we'd go, what was your favorite meal you've had overseas? Or if you could be in one location right now, what would it be and what would you be eating? Well, anyway, this sort of sparked off a bit of an idea, and that has led to a new podcast that I'm working on with my lovely husband. Yes, the one I married in Paris, and it's called Dish. The premise? We trap all of our special guests on a deserted island and ask them to bring one dish that they would eat for the rest of eternity. Now, we have had some incredible people on our island, including Lola Berry, Georgia Love, Sian Redgrave. If you've ever watched Great Australian Bake Off, you'll know her. Celia Pakwola. But what I've got for you right here is an episode with one of our favourite guests so far, the absolutely incandescent Melissa Leong, host and judge of MasterChef. She talks about food with a degree of passion only you, my dear Ruler Mark listeners, would truly understand. And I think you'll really enjoy our talk. And if you do like the show, I'd love it if you could head over and subscribe. We put out a new podcast every single week, and frankly, you're the kind of refined Francophiles I think would truly appreciate Dish. So here it is, our interview with the lovely and wonderful Melissa Leong.
Imagine this. You're stranded on an island forever. But don't freak out because you get to bring one dish with you, your desert island dish. What is it?
Every week your hosts, Paul and Tegan, that's us.
Hello.
Hello, we'll ask this question. They'll chat with and torment a literal raft of guests on the island who'll dish up stories, gossip and culinary secrets.
But they all have one big thing in common. They bloody love food.
Welcome to Dish. Hello and welcome to Dish. I'm Paul Verhoeven.
And I'm Tegan Higginbotham, and every week we trap
a celebrity on our food island and keep them here basically for the rest of eternity.
We ensorcel them.
What is ensorcel?
Ensorcelment. It's where you basically use magic to keep people here against their will.
Ah, so sauce as in sorcery as opposed to
sorcery.
Tomato.
Yes.
Because yes. I thought you meant we're luring them with food, which we're kind of doing in a way.
Well, absolutely. Although we're making people bring a dish, which means we're ensorceling them with their own sauce, which hasn't been sourced yet because they haven't cooked it yet.
Every week we ask our celebrities who have been trapped on the island to bring one dish that they are happy to eat for the rest of eternity, their yep. desert island dish.
That's right.
We've had some incredible, bizarre dishes and a bag of flour brought to the island so far.
Doesn't count. I'm so mad about the flour. I'm so mad. We had one rule, bring a dish, Sean.
So far, we have so few rules on the island. Sharing is okay. The island has not been named, but we think it is somewhere in the South Pacific.
And as we've established, it looks like the set of Hook. So there's just kind of tree houses made of bamboo at this point.
And it is 1 kilometre squared bigger than Phillip Island.
That's right.
As people will also know, you and I get to transport ourselves in and off of the island. We're the only people on the island who can do this. We have not shared our powers. It is cruel and unusual, and we're happy with that.
Now, on the flag for this island, on Dish Island, it has something in Latin, and the translation actually is suck shit losers.
So as we we have to really ground ourselves in that while all of our celebrities are trapped on the island,
yep.
Paul and I are trapped in a very different type of island. We are trapped in the island of nothingness that is Gippsland.
But there's nothing here.
No, just in this particular part.
The problem is your parents chose, they literally opened the map, closed their eyes, went to a random spot, and they picked a spot which is just, it's so unfeasibly dull here.
It's not. It's lovely. It's quiet. It's just different. But while we are up here riding out Lockie D number 5, because mm-hmm. Melbourne has been popped, it makes it sound friendlier, our fifth lockdown.
Don't say Lockie D number 5. It makes me think about Lou Bega. There's a reference.
Lockie D number 5. Don't do that, actually. We've been baking and cooking up an absolute storm up
yes.
here because we have access to my mother's incredibly large kitchen where you can never find anything, but everything is there.
Yeah, she has a system. She has the place divided up into like quadrants and subsections, and it makes sense to her, but she gets frustrated when I don't know where the ramekins are. They're not with the bowls. They're in a kind of like a sub bowl area, and they're hot because she's about 3 feet high and she has a stepladder to get to things.
Yeah.
It's very confusing, and also the benches are so low that I almost have to duck down. Basically, I'm in a hobbit kitchen.
While we're in our hobbit kitchen, as I said, we've been baking and cooking a lot. Mm. I made what I think was my best choux pastry the other day.
Very good.
I made an eclair, and the actual choux pastry was exceptional. However, instead of filling it with the chantilly cream, this time I tried to fill it with a more of a traditional vanilla custard.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a custard cream. And I think then when I put the chocolate on top, the chocolate was too overpowering for the custard cream, which was a really delicate palate. So the whole thing, although being texturally quite satisfying, was imbalanced. And I was a bit frustrated by that imbalance.
You also got annoyed when I bit the end off and sucked the cream out and made weird noises.
Well, that was offensive, yes.
I just love your baking is so, so good.
That's lovely that you say that. But do you know what happened just yesterday?
What?
So it's so stupid, but they are currently casting for this next season of The Great Australian Bake Off.
Mm.
And, you know, we had Sian on last week and I've been thinking about Bake Off so much. So I started an application and then it was only yesterday, actually, that I decided that, no, I'm being ridiculous. I do not have the skills to compete on The Great Australian Bake Off, so I'm not going to apply.
I think Sian would be furious if she knew.
Maybe, but, you know, Sian talks down her skills on The Great Australian Bake Off and still she would have... I mean, even anybody on that season that Sian was on would have run circles around me. I can do a few things and I can do them pretty well,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not a proficient baker. I mean, today I am considering baking bread for the very first time in my life. You cannot go on The Great Australian Bake Off if you have not even cooked a loaf of bread in your lifetime.
I beg to differ. And you know what's interesting? Our guest today, our ensorcelled guest on the island today, is someone who has more than a passing familiarity with
reality television cooking competitions.
Yes, exactly.
She is a freelance food and travel writer, a food media consultant, a radio broadcaster, a television presenter, MC, cookbook editor, and who's sexiest person of the year in 2020. Ring-a-ding-ding. You're gonna know who I'm talking about, but she's just about the country's favourite MasterChef judge and host. She will eat anything once, according to her website. Please welcome to the island, Melissa Leong. We are currently in my dad's his space workshop, where he likes to put all of his space Lego and toys, and we have used a possum cage to prop up the mic, and we've used all of Mum's old washing racks to try and create some sound buffer. Oh. It's a fucking disaster.
This is like a zombie film where we are making the last dispatch to the survivors from a hovel. It's terrible.
But all of that aside, welcome to our island. This is our special little lockdown place that, you know, from one lockdown from you to the other, you are trapped here forever now. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Look, it is a bit apocalyptic, and I think we just make do with what we have. I mean, everyone has their own weird little sort of, you know, home set up at the moment. And I think Em Rusciano was using her wardrobe for a little while before she set up her thing, and, like, you know, just because of sound dampening and all the rest of it. So, you know, whatever works.
You've got to work with it. Well, one thing that's made it tricky for us out here as well is that my dad, what did he do again? He got confused with getting the internet from his little space garage where we are into the house.
Yes, yes, that's right. And he dug a trench. He dug a trench for the wireless to help the wireless go better.
And as we said, Dad, the clue's in the name. It's called wireless. You didn't need to do that.
Oh, it's in the air, is it? Yes, Kevin, it's in the air. It's magic.
But you know what? Sometimes you just need to dig a hole.
So, you just got to dig a hole.
He's just, look, he had all these amazing shovels and he needed an excuse to deploy them. And he did. He dug this enormous Normandy-style trench all the way across his property.
I wonder if this is actually, though, something that you can relate to, Melissa, because I know that I've done lots of stalking lately of you, and I know that you struggle to relax and to take holidays like many people. Yep. How are you finding Lockie D5?
Well, look, lockdown always seems to happen just at the end of a filming block. Mm. So it's usually at a time where, as an introvert, I kind of, after spending days and days and weeks and months with, say, 100 over people every single day, whom I love, they're my family, but I need that time to just sort of recharge alone. So we just finished filming Celebrity MasterChef not that long ago. And so to be able to sort of do some work at home, you know, in the quiet, it's not such a bad thing for me. And I realize that that's a bit of a privilege for me. But yeah, I'm just trying to sort of take the best out of it at the moment. So I'm not yet bored, but I might start digging holes in the backyard.
Oh, sure. I mean, provided you have a backyard, if you have an apartment, that would be very tricky.
That would be super awkward for the neighbor downstairs, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm also an introvert. I play a lot of video games. So whenever lockdown happens, every time this happens, I secretly go, yes, but it doesn't take long for the novelty to wear off. Like, at what point do you start to go a bit spare?
Well, how many days is this so far? We were locked down from Friday and it's Monday. Still going okay, because I am also a fantastic procrastinator, and I have a few bits of homework that I need. I have a couple of deadlines due, and it's amazing all of the little things that you find that you need to do before you can actually do the work that you're supposed to do.
Do you cook? You eat for a living. You're a professional, you know, taster of food. But when push comes to shove, are you spending much of this time in the kitchen?
I do. I rented a house thinking that I would have an office and then have a separate space, you know, obviously, you know, not work in the kitchen essentially. But it always ends up that I will work from the dining table, because inevitably I'm cooking something or testing something and I just need to be near the kitchen. So I cook a lot. At the moment, it's sort of just falling back in love with cooking again, because of course we shoot 62 episodes of the main series of MasterChef a year, and you come home and I'm not cooking. Like, I'm most nights of the week, I'll batch cook on a Sunday. I'll turn on the music. I'll slow cook something. I'll have a glass of wine and I'll just let something slowly tick away that will last a couple of meals. And that's usually my cooking. That's usually all the cooking I do during those blocks of time until I have a little bit more time off and my brain can kind of open up again and go, okay, all right, let's just do something. Let's do something interesting, or cook something that I've always wanted to cook, or try out a new recipe or something like that. So yeah, there's definitely something going on in the kitchen at all times. I recently, I'm a big fan of using what's in the fridge because of course food waste is a huge issue, not only in Australia but across the world. And so I like to look at what I have and try and be creative with it. And the latest thing has been, I had this huge salami, a fennel cacciatore, and it was okay, but not sort of the quality that I would sort of say slice and make a charcuterie board out of or something like that. So I decided to blitz it all up and make a sort of an XO sauce with it. And that was really fun and really exciting, and it actually worked out really well. So I was pretty chuffed.
It's interesting though that you say that when you were filming and when you're in the, you know, I guess in the filming trenches, that food isn't
stop
a problem.
Stop saying trenches.
I must stop saying trenches. That you do fall out of love.
Dig up.
That you fall out of love with cooking, or not out of love, but you can't be bothered a little bit.
Well, we, you know, sometimes we're at work for 14, 15 hours a day. So when you get home, not only am I sort of done with talking about food for the day, but I'm also full. So I don't need to cook. Often dinner is not really a thing because I've had 22 pastas that day or something. And it's just, I mean, you know, I don't have that inhuman appetite that Jock has. Jock can eat all day at work and on the breaks and go home and cook a full meal for his family and do it all over again.
Yeah.
So that's just not quite normal though. So
no.
He's uniquely cut out for this job.
I have to say congratulations on the second series of MasterChef. Your second series, I should say, not the second series. It's been going since before Jesus was born, I'm quite sure.
But, no, it's a retcon. It's a retcon. So the other season's never happened, right?
It was delightful. I found myself crying more than I had expected this season, but lovely happy tears. How did you find this second season compared to the first? I know that, you know, during the first you all came in and it was so exciting because you were the new judges, the new hosts, and then you absolutely smashed it out of the park with these incredible ratings. Did the second time, was it fun, more enjoyable for you because you understood the format, or was there more pressure? How did it feel coming up again?
Well, look, that's right. The first series was insane. I mean, I remember when they were talking about what episode one would be and having a blackened room and a single spotlight and Gordon Ramsay introducing you to the world. I mean, that's insane. And I recently have been shooting Celebrity MasterChef with Tilly Ramsay, and you know, so talking to her about her dad introducing us, you know, to the world in a way was it was just such a lovely thing to sort of see come full circle. But that first season was an entirely different beast. It was such a privilege to be introduced in that way and to work with some of the most beloved characters from the MC universe, really, to borrow parlance from the other world. But yeah, so that was really great. But then coming into this season, it was like our very first season, because it's the that are hopeful. Hopeful for translating their love of food into maybe something more and daring to dream about it. So to be able to be there and to help choose that top 24 and then see them all sort of learn and grow and become each other's support network and just express themselves in an entirely different way was really, really fun. And I still feel very fond. I think I'll always feel especially fond for this top 24 because, you know, they let us guide them in a way, which is a weird sort of thing to have bestowed upon you. But it's a great perk of my job.
It must emotionally be, I guess, what am I trying to say? I think it must take a lot more emotion than people even at home would realize. I mean, I know that I immediately attached myself to Kishwar. I'm sure that most people did. I think that was the whole thing. And how does it feel when you're in that room and maybe you even know who's going to win and you know that that means somebody else isn't? How do you hold that together?
Well, emotion is a huge part of it. You're absolutely right. I think that if I if I don't care, then why should I expect an audience to care? So I care a lot and I care every day, and that's why I go home and I'm completely shattered, because I know that it's my responsibility to listen and to tease out those stories and to give all of myself. And so that's the hard part of the job, is the fact that your energy is all given to what you do, but it's also the greatest privilege in the world to be able to do that as well. So it is really tough, and especially when you're sort of balancing sometimes hearing what your directive is in your ear, having to deliver something to a group of people, but also you're thinking about what's about to happen next and how you need to keep some of that emotion back. There's a lot of juggling that goes on in behind the scenes and inside our brains when we're doing something like that. And I think it's just always about, for me, it's just reminding myself to be present. And to, as much as you have different voices going on, some of them real and some of them imaginary, you have to just really remember that you are in the room with that person, and this is a life-changing moment for them. And that usually shakes me into a space of being able to be still and be able to be with that person and give them what they need.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
But you've also got an incredible level of, I would say, power, and I think you know, there's that story about the kid who was playing the he got this really crappy role in a Christmas play, and he gets cast as the innkeeper, and he's so bitter about it that when they ask if there's any room at the inn, he's like, yes, and he just ruins the entire Christmas play. You have it within you. I mean, when you get attached to favorites, do you ever consider just throwing
it. She goes rogue.
Just throwing it. Oh.
That's what I'm asking. Yeah. Do you ever just like let that go to your head and just go, you know what? I'm just going to change history and just go nuts.
No, because I, as much as, look, it's human nature to be connected to people and to end up having your favorites, or I think in many ways you see some of yourself in someone, and that's maybe what makes you connect to them. You can relate to them in some way. But our job is, it's right there in the title, right? We're judges. We're not hosts, we're judges. And so in order to do that, we need to be as impartial as possible. And as much as I think we're all aware of our own human nature to be connected and to see something, you know, want to back a horse in a race or something like that, it's always about the food on the day. It has to come down to that, because if it stops being that, then we don't have a show.
Yeah.
And this show, as you mentioned, has been going on since, I think, the 80s in the UK.
Oh, has it really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
So it's been going on for a really long time. It's had obviously very many different versions internationally, but this particular version obviously has been going on for just over a decade, and in itself it's the most popular format globally, and there's a reason for that, and it's because it's a shared love of food, sure, but it's also about judging what's on the plate. So we don't judge the people, we judge the food, and that's very much something that we you know, we say it's a bit of a motto, and so we always just try and be as impartial as we can, as human as we are.
It does also fall into that category, which I'm really happy exists, especially in 2021, of like food adjacent feel goodery, because Tegan and I we are like lifelong devotees of the Great British Bake Off, because it is a show about people collaborating and helping each other, and it's about the food. I mean, how important is it to you guys that MasterChef kind of scratches that itch for an Australian audience?
Absolutely. Well, it is always all about the food when it comes to MasterChef, and I think that that's a beautiful thing, because no matter what's going on in the world and no matter where you come from or what your perspective on life is, you can connect over food. It's a thing that sustains us. It's a thing that carries our stories from generation to generation. So to be able to be part of something that celebrates humanity in the most sort of fun, engaging but also egalitarian way is very, very cool. Mm. You know, it sort of manages to circumnavigate, you know, some the trickier parts of being human, I think, and reminds us that we are all still connected in some way through this necessity and this love of food.
I know that I last year, and I'm sure many people, when everything was kind of stripped back during lockdown, food became more important to me than it ever had been before. I know that that's reflected in a lot of other people. And I realized that, you know, I'm sitting across from my husband, who's the love of my life, but food would have to be one of the great loves of my life.
Hey, if it came down to food and meat, please take food.
One thing I did notice I kept feeling when I was watching this series of MasterChef was I kept feeling overwhelmed at how little I knew. I mean, I thought I knew a lot about food. I've done food every single day, but
sometimes more than once.
for some may say for your entire life.
Yeah.
Also,
I am a fan.
Well, Malcolm Gladwell said 10,000 hours to become an expert at something.
Yeah. But there is, I mean, for example, the word umami. I don't know if I have been missing something, but I feel like in the past 2 months, I hear the word umami. Mm. And I didn't until a couple of weeks ago even know what it was. I thought it had something to do with edamame and maybe that it was a bean.
Well, same. Well, it originates from Japan, so you're not too far off.
That's good.
In terms of the origin of the word.
I can just cut to the chase, Tegan. Tegan has written down here on a piece of paper, yeah, what the f*** is umami? So, I mean, if you want to answer that very indelicate question for us.
Well, I mean, umami is, it's identified as sort of the ultimate expression of savory flavor. So there are certain foods in the world that naturally have that. And so we're talking things like tomatoes, Vegemite, mushrooms. They all have just this underpinning of a savory quality to food. And when you add it to something else, it gives you that very satisfying kind of savory flavor. And it was, there was a scientist in Japan who was the first person to sort of identify it and give it a name. And it's something that we really look for in food, especially obviously in savory food, because it's just something that humans are attracted to. And so when you eat it, you don't necessarily go, yes, that's umami, but you taste it, you know that it's delicious because it's really, it doesn't have to be meaty, but it has that meaty sort of quality about it.
Interesting. Are we talking about it more in the past, I don't know, year? Is it actually a word that's buzzing at the moment and people are referring to it more, or have I missed many things?
It's a word that sort of floats around in the food space a lot because of how sort of important it is to the generation of flavor and the building of sort of a flavor characteristic. So essentially, you know how we joke about MSG being in food and food is more delicious because there's MSG in it sometimes. Mm-hmm. Well, glutamate, that's exactly what it is, right? It's the natural occurrence of glutamate in food. So monosodium glutamate is MSG. So glutamate is like the naturally occurring sort of savory quality that makes food tastier. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about it in a food context, especially when we're tasting a dish, if it has umami, it has that extra kind of turbo boost of savory deliciousness that makes the dish better. And so that's why you hear chefs using that term. And then obviously then it's just that trickle down effect of people going, oh, umami. Yeah.
Is what you're saying that umami is like love in that you can't define it, but you know it when it exists?
Then you know it's there. Exactly. This is super delicious. I can't tell you why, but it's so good. Yeah, that's exactly it. The other people tend to find it is in fermented things. So why is miso is not only salty, but it's savory. So if that's sort of, that's probably a really good sort of way to illustrate it is when you have a bowl of miso soup, it's not just about it being salty, but it sort of has this very, this very savory quality about it.
I guess this is actually, even though we have taken you down a path that I don't think either of us were expecting, it really does kind of get back to what I was trying to very inarticulately sum up before, which is when I was watching MasterChef, I was blown away by how little I know when it comes to food and how much there is still to learn. And how have you gotten to this position where you just know so much, because I know that being a food critic wasn't your first path. This is, you know, you're one of these fascinating people who've taken so many paths, and now you're, you know, you're a judge and host on MasterChef. Will you ever get to the point where you think you know everything? Will you?
Well, it's like music or film, isn't it? I was recently, Pete Hellier has asked me to do his movie podcast. Mm-hmm. You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet, and it's amazing. And I thought when he asked me, I was like, yeah, you know, there's let's look at the list of classic movies that I've never seen. And then I started thinking about it and going, wow, you can never know enough about cinematography or about sort of film studies. You can never know all of music. And it's the same thing with food. So I think if you think about it too much, my brain would probably explode about the things I don't know about food. And it's just, it's an ongoing pursuit and obsession and collection of information. And I'll probably forget things as I'm learning new things. But it's, you know, as you mentioned, I fell into food accidentally. And I love it. And so it's I guess it's like anything that you become obsessed with. You allow extra parts of your brain, extra real estate in your brain to be taken up by as much as you can learn. And, you know, I would never for a minute say that I know everything there is to know about food, because you just keep learning every single day, and you have the great privilege of this, of being on a show like this, and the information that other people bring to you about culture and regional specificity and recipes that you've never experienced in real life, and you continue to build on that knowledge. So as much as MasterChef sort of places us as the experts, and we do know a lot about food, it's also a really great learning ground for everybody who is willing to open themselves up to that.
I think this ties really well into your catchphrase and your kind of ethos is you'll try everything once, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'll eat anything once.
And that's amazing, because my biggest beef in the world is the fussy eater as a person. I am baffled by fussy eaters. I'm confused by them. And
Friends with fussy eaters? Either of you?
I am friends. We are friends with some fussy eaters. It's just this, oh God, it's this horrible gauntlet. Whereas with you, I feel like if we could invite you over and say, we've made long pig, and you'd be like, yep, sure, haven't tried that before.
Let's do that. And then we'd be eating humans, wouldn't we?
Absolutely, yes.
I think like you said, I didn't study food, but I love food, and I studied every day in my own way. And I think that natural inquisitive nature was what is what's put me here. So why would I stop now? You know, it's always about banking experiences. And you don't have to love everything that you eat. But I was sailing down the Mekong River, the Mekong Delta, from Vietnam to Cambodia on assignment. That was probably one of the last trips that I got to do before, you know, all of this kind of craziness of MasterChef, but also pandemic happened. And I was offered an aperitivo snack of deep fried tarantulas and crickets.
Amazing.
And what are you going to do? Like, you're in this part of the world where this is a regular source of protein and nourishment. It would be disrespectful not to partake in that experience. And did I have to like it? No, but it was actually really interesting. It's kind of tarantula is like soft shell crab. You know, if you kind of get your head around it that way, that, you know, there's when you think about, say, I can't remember what it was, but there are lots of similarities between certain insects and certain crustaceans, for example. So if we're fine with eating prawns, but we're not fine with, you know, eating crickets, then that's a bit silly, isn't it? It's just a mind thing.
Oh yeah,
I agree.
Absolutely. But what's on your bucket list? I mean, tarantulas is it's pretty odd. I mean, but what is on your list of things that you haven't tried that you are just...
I haven't tried.
Yeah.
I don't have sort of like a target bucket list. It's more about a context thing. So if I'm traveling somewhere in the world and something is culturally appropriate, something's culturally apt, you've been offered something at someone's table, then I'm going to eat it. You know, I'm going to at least do my best to try it, whatever that happens to be. So, you know, that I guess I don't know what I don't know about that. You know, there are obviously taboo things, like if we think about going to Japan and eating whale, I wouldn't seek it out. you know, because obviously that sort of defies the ethics of environment and all of the rest of it. But if you're sitting at someone's table and they've offered you something like whale, for example, then it's disrespectful not to partake at that point.
That is so interesting, because I wasn't even thinking about the moral danger. I was thinking about physical danger, like pufferfish and tetrodotoxin, but you've raised this interesting thing. I mean, would you ever go to some like sketchy backstreet place and knock three times on a door and go down to a basement and eat pufferfish, the fish that like coin flip could kill you?
Is it 1 in 37 or something like that you can be poisoned?
Yeah, it can kill you.
There's some very low, it's entirely likely that you'll either be very sick or you could possibly die from it. Would I try it? If I had the opportunity to have it prepared by someone who knew what they were doing, for sure.
Speaking of the morality of food, Paul, you brought up something in the last episode of this season's MasterChef that you bumped up against and I thought was hilarious.
Go on. Edible gold. It's not like... Because, I did have this image of someone like crawling through a mine going, man, this is going to come out someone's backside one day, which is an interesting journey for gold. But, I mean, how did you... Did that? Am I crazy for thinking that's a little odd? I mean, does it taste like anything?
Well, gold leaf and silver leaf is sort of quite often used in pretty fancy desserts and things like that as an embellishment. Would I say that that's the most amount of gold I've eaten in a dish? Probably, because that's like quite a few sheets. I think especially on quichua's, I think she had like 50,000 sheets of it just sort of all pressed in there. And it doesn't taste like anything, really. It's just, it sort of melts away and becomes nothing. So, yeah, I mean, poor miners out there doing their thing. ends up being very, very fine, wafer thin layers of gold that end up on a fancy dessert. But yeah, it doesn't really taste like anything. It just looks really fancy. And I think on that particular occasion, Peter Gilmore is an absolute genius. And so to be able to experience, a dish created by him and then interpreted, as best as they can by the contestants was very, very cool.
As you've said, your career has taken so many different interesting directions since lockdown started and the MasterChef experiences hit your life. I'm sure so much has changed. Do you even bother looking ahead at the moment, or are you still just kind of rolling with it?
I think that attitude of rolling with it's probably kept me in good stead in this last year and a half.
Yeah.
Being freelance for, prior to this job, I guess about 13 years, saying yes to opportunities that aren't necessarily a complete fit, but just saying yes anyway because the opportunity is there and because you probably need to earn or learn. I think that's a really good way of sort of being in life, because you then are able to roll with the punches maybe a little bit easier than others.
Yeah.
So for me, yes, I mean, we can say yes to festivals and appearances and gigs coming up in the next little while, but whether or not we'll be able to do them, it's all very questionable at this point, isn't it? I don't think we thought we'd be in lockdown number 5 at this point. We thought, oh, well, we'll just go through that main sort of, the first two lockdowns are pretty intense. So we thought, well, we nip it in the bud and sort of have a bit of a hiatus from regular life for a bit. Then hopefully this will be it. But here we are, fifth one. How many more are we going to have? Who knows? There's no point anticipating what's coming next at this point. I think we just say yes to the opportunities that come to us. And if we're able to, if we're able to live them, then we should.
Yeah.
Otherwise, easy come, easy go, I suppose.
There was a rumour that I read that you might be a regular panellist on the project soon. Are you able to talk about that? Could we be seeing you on there soon, maybe?
I have no idea. That was one of the funnier tabloid pieces that someone told me happened. So I've appeared on the project as a guest a number of times because of MasterChef. Where that rumour has come from, I have absolutely no idea. But it was probably, actually, there it is in the name, no idea, that particular publication. So no idea. And I think there was some rumor about there must be beef between me and Carrie because of that. And I'm just like, Carrie's a journalist, first of all. So anchoring a show like that makes complete sense. She's, you know, one of the prominent voices of modern journalism, especially on 10, but in Australia in general. And why does anybody need to generate beef between successful women anywhere?
I know.
I thought that was just a really interesting thing, as I never thought my name would be pitted against someone else's name in the pursuit of completely baseless tabloid journalism. But there you have it, is that very Australian thing of when you hit a certain level of awareness in pop culture, you must have an issue with someone else and you must have an ego that drives you, which is ridiculous. I'm just happy to be here eating the snacks. So, you know, I'm good with where I am for right now. I love my job. And of course I love working, you know, with the network that I work with, because they've said yes to someone who looks like me, which hasn't happened a lot and is slowly happening more and more. But, you know, inclusivity is a pretty great thing, and it's a pretty great thing to be part of a network that is driven by it.
Yeah, I've of course not experienced the level of exposure and fame that you have in this country. I know that when I did a show a few years back with ABC and it was all the panelists on this sports show were women, one of the very few interviews I gave, they took this one sentence out and made it sound as if there was beef between myself and one of the other females on the show. It's like, come on, really? It was so...
Because there can only be one sports commentator that's female. Like, there can only be one type of everybody, obviously.
I mean, and sure, like, that sentence of mine was, I hate women, but I don't know why they took it out of context.
I am the Highlander of sports journalism, and there can only be one, and it's me.
Rumors are weird. I mean, I heard a rumor that every new iteration of MasterChef, like Doctor Who, all three hosts physically regenerate into three different people.
That's awesome.
Look, I think it's about time.
I know, I'm
Melissa.
Sorry.
We're just having the best time. But Melissa, I think it's about time to ask you what you've brought with you and what your desert island dish is.
Okay, my desert island dish. And look, if you Google my response to this a question like this, it'll be the same every single time. And it's my mother's Hainanese chicken rice. It just has to be. You know, it's the first thing that I learned from her repertoire when I left home, you know, when I moved out of home, and I really missed, you know, I really missed her cooking. And that was the one dish that really stood out to me as something that I needed to learn how to make, because it's home. It's home culturally, it's home, you know, in terms of just my relationship with my mom and my family. And it is also a deliciously complete meal. I mean, chicken and rice in any culture is substantial. It's soul food, and it's simple as well. You know, it really relies on, you know, three basic ingredients to flavor everything. And the fact that it's layered so many times and reinforced in that way is what makes it so powerful. Both in flavor and both in significance. So,
is this a secret recipe? Are you able to talk us through it, even in a little detail?
Oh, look, it's absolutely. It's not a secret recipe at all. It's very, very simple. So you start off with a whole chicken, and my mum always likes to scrub the skin of the chicken in and also inside the cavity with salt really well. But the effect of scrubbing the skin, it's like a face scrub, right? It makes the skin smooth. And so when you go to poach the chicken, you end up with this really sort of tender, glossy, gorgeous skin, because of course you eat it. So you scrub the skin and then basically give it a really good rinse, stuff the cavity with, I like to sort of smash it up just to let everything sort of release, but ginger, garlic and spring onions, and they go into the cavity, pop the chicken in a pot of water cold, and then bring it up to a boil. And you let that boil for about, so depending on the size of the chicken, about 10, 15 minutes on a full boil, turn it off, stick a lid on, and then let it just sit for about half an hour to 45 minutes, and it just continues to cook. But what you end up having is a very, very tender result, because you're not overcooking the chicken, you're just sort of letting the residual heat do its thing. And then in the meantime, what you do, and I should have mentioned this earlier, is when you're cleaning the chicken, you cut off a piece of the skin or the fat from around the neck, and you render out the fat in a pan, and then you actually fry off jasmine rice. So wash the jasmine rice really, really thoroughly, because the whole aim of the game is to get rid of a fair amount of starch. So drain it, and then you're basically frying the rice in the chicken fat, and then again, the ginger, garlic, spring onions to kind of start to perfume the rice. And then you use the water, the stock from cooking the chicken, as the liquid to cook your rice.
Oh my God.
So you're using everything in there, and you're layering flavors. So you're not cooking rice with water. You're cooking it with chicken, the chicken stock. And so everything has just turbo amounts of flavor. And so once the chicken's rested in the liquid, you take it out, you refresh it in cold water, which gives a really lovely snap to the skin, and you let that cool down. And you should always eat Hainanese chicken at room temperature, so it shouldn't be hot. So it should just have started to jellify between the meat and the skin. And that's when you know it's really good. You then take the water, the chicken water, and you essentially clarify it, boil it down, and add seasoning to it. And then that becomes a consommé that you drink. So there's literally nothing wasted in the entire process. And then depending on who you talk to, sometimes people also will put a little bit of white cabbage in there as well. So that sort of changes the flavor. It adds a sort of an extra vegetal kind of layer of flavor. But it really, my mum never did that, so I don't do it. And I think it works out pretty good. And other people put pandan leaf in the chicken as well, and that gives it sort of an extra kind of certain something also. That's a tip that David Thompson, who is a very, very, very good chef. He is probably one of the most beloved and valued exports of chefs in Australia. Yeah, he taught me that trick. And sometimes I'll do it and sometimes I won't do it.
It sounds beautiful. Just sounds like care and comfort in a recipe.
Yeah. It's super easy, but it's one of those things that just takes time to do properly. Yeah. And the more you do it, the better you become at it as well. So there's no secret tricks at all, other than care and attention.
But this is a family recipe. This is one that was handed down to you. Does it have your mum's seal of approval, or could she do it better?
I am going to put it out there and say I think at this stage I can probably make it better than mum. Maybe. I certainly have no complaints from anybody that I've ever made it for. It's one of those dishes that it doesn't matter who's coming over. I'm 1,000% confident that I can make it as good as anyone in the world.
That's so great.
You need to have that when you have friends like mine. So whether or not they get sick of eating Hainanese chicken rice, I don't care, but that's fine. That's definitely a dish that I know I can rest my laurels on that one.
I feel like I now have a mission, which is I know I'm not going to get everything down pat, but I want to have one dish where I know that I can cook it as well.
Bust
as
it out.
Anyone
yeah.
else. That's a really That's wonderful it. Little mission.
Do you think you could, do you think if you were to enter MasterChef yourself as a contestant, do you think if you whip this dish out, it would get a stamp of approval?
What insanity. Speaking of people that enter MasterChef, hats off to them. They're absolutely incredible to have the guts to allow the universe to happen, because you don't know what's going to happen in that kitchen. Turning up every day for months on end, not knowing what you're about to do is insane to me. Yeah. Absolutely insane. I'm a massive control freak, so I love holding all the cards. I love knowing exactly what's about to happen that day. But these people turn up every single day and they create the most incredible things. And I think, you know, that is just, it's such a magical thing. And I really admire their guts and their determination to persist with that. If I made this dish as an entry dish on the show, would it rate? Yes, it absolutely would.
Oh.
No, I have no question. Like, this is, I'm saying this is the one dish that I know absolutely everybody will love. If you, of course, if you eat chicken. If you don't eat chicken, then that's not my problem. I'm very, very confident with my version of Hainan Gai Fun. And
You know what? Enter and serve it every week, regardless of the parameters. And you know what? If it's good enough, it'll carry you through to the very
but
end.
But it's also chicken with rice, you know. So again, it's not sort of a such a full on sort of flavor profile that you couldn't eat it regularly.
Yeah, okay.
As well.
Okay.
So that's what's good about it.
Well, you know, it's very welcome on the island, as are you, Melissa. Really, I mean, what a great addition. Oh my God, we have chicken rice on the island
now. I know. I feel like we need it actually a bit more because people have been bringing
weird stuff.
I'll be honest, I've been a bit surprised by some of the dishes, in love with them, but very surprised by some people's desert island dishes.
Anyway, Melissa, thank you so much for joining us. You can never leave, and we look forward to seeing you around the traps. We've given you a nice kind of wing of the island. It's like it's very well shaded, and there's lots of flowing water, so you'll be fine.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Can't believe we just spoke with Melissa Leong.
I know. She, much like everyone else on this island, is a national treasure.
Let's call it Treasure Island. Oh, no, that's been done.
National Treasure Island.
No, I don't like it. I do want to name the island. If anybody does have any suggestions on what we should name our island, please do hit us up on Instagram at Dish Island.
That's right. We've had such a great time with you on the past, you know, however many episodes. It's been such a great journey so far.
It has been. Please do tell your friends about the podcast. I know that we are recording from atop a possum cage, but, you know, we really would love it if lots of people could listen to the show. So share it around, and we look forward to talking food with you next week.
Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Dish Island.
Dish is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.